This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good afternoon, everyone. So, the first full day of Sesshin in progress, works in progress, all of us. I hope it's going all right for you, that you're beginning to settle in, feeling okay in your own skin, taking good care of who you are, all those people who show up in the wall. If it feels like you're in the weeds, that's actually the topic of my talk, being in the weeds. But I want to tell you that I had a whole plan for a talk based on how Sesshin always is for me. I'm always in the weeds the first few days. But because my karmic seeds or God or suchness or whatever has a sense of humor, the Sesshin is not like that at all. And I'm not really in the weeds. And Hogan and Oshin will tell you that they're both concerned about what's coming next. Because if you start out here, there's only one place to go. So we'll see what happens next. It started when I first arrived here, the stuff that became very different. And in the room that I'm staying in, there's a little fortune cookie stuck to the wall. And that I saw it the night I arrived. And it says, the point is not to see through people. The point is to see people through. So in this job of Eno, and in our job as bodhisattvas, and in our job as being human beings, it feels to me that that really rings true, what we're doing today throughout this Sesshin is to see each other through. I should back up and tell you that typical Sesshin, I spend a few days suffering, just resisting everything. I don't know if you're there, but that's what the weeds look like for me. You know, nothing's right. You know, I make these commitments to myself that if I'm crying, I'm not going to wipe anything off my face, and I'm not going to move if there's a bug, and I'm sitting strong. And, you know, that has its own kind of resistance. And those are usually the first few days of Sesshin. It's not usually until the third or fourth day that I'm in gratitude land. But something started with that fortune cookie and continued last night with your sitting, with our sitting. It was a strong sit. Those strong sits are continuing today. And this morning in my coffee cup, every sip I took created a landscape that is Giroux's little rock landscape outside, which I had noticed because I've started noticing again. So I took a sip and the coffee would make in my milk, would make a little mountain range in my every sip. There'd be a mountain range coming from the bottom. The mountain would come up and then it would disappear and dissolve into everything like we do, merging into everything as we sit zazen. And then in this room, sitting with you, the words that came to me from your sitting is deep, calling deep. It's just like a mantra in my head now. It's not mine. I wouldn't say it's yours, it's ours. Deep, calling deep. And that's what I'm hearing. And when I looked around this room, all I saw was a Buddha field. You know, Mike Newhall paints these Buddha fields. And whether you can believe it or not, that's what I saw, a room full of Buddhas. Which reminds me of the Lotus Sutra. I don't know if you're familiar with the Lotus Sutra, but there's a scene in it that I love where the Buddha ascends the platform. He's going to give a talk. Gets up there and he goes into meditative state and he's silent. He says nothing. And he says nothing for so long that the Sangha, which is gathered around him, starts going, something wrong? You know, that kind of thing we do. Something going on? Is he okay? And when it gets to a particular din, at least the translation, and I'm probably, you know, making it better. But at some point, you know, they're worrying about him. And this light, this bright light comes right out between his eyes, right? And what that light illuminates is all the Buddha realms, right? All of the realms of existence, all the portals of perception, let's call it. Everything is illuminated. And what does the audience see? The audience sees a bunch of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas helping each other, helping everybody wake up. That's what is in that scene. And that's what I saw here. Now, I don't have a light coming out of my forehead. I haven't seen a light coming out of your foreheads. I wouldn't say it's not there. But even so, I think that's what's happening here. That's the Buddha field I see. Everybody waking up together. Not because there's anything magical going on, and I certainly do not have a light coming out of my forehead. I know that part. But this is Denkoe. This is the transmission of light, Sesshin, or the gathering of light. And it just feels that that's in the room. Okay, back to the planned programming, which was my Dharma talk. That was all just because it happened. As is the custom, at least for me, I'd like to start with a story from our tradition. This is number 89 from the Book of Serenity. Last night, Paula mentioned Yunwen, and this is Yunwen's student, Dongshan, speaking. Dongshan instructed the assembly and said, "It's the beginning of autumn, the end of summer, and you brethren and sisters will go, some to the east, some to the west. You must go where there's not an inch of grass over 10,000 miles. A few weeks later, Shishuang said, "When you go out of the gate, there's grass all over." Over a century later, Dayang said, "Even if you don't go out of the gate, grass is abundant everywhere." Can any of us find a place where there is no grass for 10,000 miles? And should we even try? Like Dongshan and his students, we are gathering at the beginning of autumn, at the end of summer, 1,000+ years after Dongshan had this conversation, we've come together to sit Denkoe, one of the four sesshins that Kobun Chino Odagawa Roshi, the founder of this temple, instituted. And since we are here in Kobun's temple, and we are speaking of the changing light, I want to let Kobun speak. These are his words. The light that is transmitted comes out of people. I don't see it in myself, but I see it in others. The light is not always constant. Like a firefly, the light is generated inside. I don't know what the substance is of it, but each one of us is a kind of potential way seeker. At the same time, our everyday lives are precisely related to the support of innumerable others who sustain our individual lives. Our individual existence must be returning the same amount of energy to others. It's beyond my understanding, but I suspect the whole thing is actually one fantastic dynamic embedded in us before we knew it. When you touch your body, you feel warmth. Something is burning. And connected with this thing that's burning, there is a light. Your eyes are rather like a window of this inner light. If you are discouraged or very ill, your eyes don't show light. When you are full of hope, full of vitality, inside and outside, your eyes shine. Partly it could be recognition of something and being recognized by it. Faith, no doubt, has something to do with this shine of eyes. They go together. Sensing the light within you is really the same as expecting a new day tomorrow. If there is a future, there is a light coming from it. So as we sit this sesshin, we are committing, maybe submitting to being with and recognizing the light, gathering it into this body-mind integration to reflect it back out again through our eyes, our speech, even the thoughts that remain just to us. Our zazen is exactly this self-recognition and self-merging, like the landscape in my coffee cup this morning. I'm going to call this light love. I know it might be a little early in sesshin to use the word love, but I'm going there. We have this great word love, and we all know what it describes when we see it, when we hear it, when we feel it, when we touch it. It is the expression of kindness and compassion and wisdom. In a touch, in a smile, in the twinkle of the eyes, even in the way we hold our own private thoughts, there is love. I think it's not ours, like it's not my love. It is something that is created in the mutuality of a thought or an exchange or a moment. That's what I think it is. We touch this in practice. It's a kind of arrival. That's how I experience it, as arrival, a profound acceptance of us just the way we are. Not perfect, as you can see, I'm not perfect, getting a big eye full of that. But we accept that and we allow our imperfections to somehow be okay, really okay, maybe even perfect. This is a profound acceptance of ourselves. And for me, it feels like it puddles out. When I can give this to myself, it feels like it puddles out and I just see it and I love all you the same way. My little definition of love is the embodiment of kindness and compassion and wisdom. It is actually part of this litmus test that I've developed for myself. It helps me gauge the effectiveness or the quality or the success of anything I'm about to do or say and even think. It helps me navigate the weeds of my life to make sure I'm not pretending, not fooling myself, not just avoiding the weeds. My litmus test is this. Does what I'm about to do bring me closer to love? Again, love being defined as kindness, compassion, wisdom. This is how I am remembering to trust myself with this question, a kind of a radical trust, which of course does not belong to me either. It arises out of the relationship in every single moment. So right now, this is the question I'm asking myself all the time, even right now. It's not a judgment, okay? I'm not saying, oh, that's not bringing me closer to love. You know, you're screwing up again. It's not that. It's more like a shorthand way of returning to my vow, but beyond vow, to returning to my deepest intention. It's a way of remembering that I'm a Buddha and that you're a Buddha already. You don't have to do anything to get there. So our practice, I think, could be conceived as how to be a Buddha. And Dogen actually says this line in the Shobogenzo. I don't know if you've read, well, some of you, I'm sure, have read Shoji. It's Birth and Death, a fascicle in Shobogenzo, Birth and Death. And he writes very pithily. It's one paragraph. And this is what he says. There is a simple way to become Buddha. When you refrain from unwholesome actions, are not attached to birth and death, and are compassionate toward all sentient beings, respectful to seniors, kind to juniors, not excluding or desiring anything, with no designing thoughts or worries, you'll be called a Buddha. Do not seek anything else. Just a few simple steps, add water, you'll be a Buddha. So the first of his steps is refrain from doing anything unwholesome. He doesn't even tell us you have to be wholesome. The bar is kind of low. Just refrain from being unwholesome. Yeah, but it's not easy. We know what unwholesome is, right? It's kind of the other spectrum for me, the other end of the spectrum. It is action with our body, speech, or mind that creates disruption, right? That kind of puts a ripple in the fabric of our relating to each moment, to ourselves, and to everyone, and to everything from all time. To me, that's what unwholesome feels like. And the question is, are we willing to watch ourselves like that? That's a really big ticket item. Dogen makes it sound easy. It's a big ticket. So the easiest way to avoid unwholesome action would be to stop talking, which maybe I should do. Just stop. You know, if I don't speak, I really cannot mess up too much, but something needs to be said. The last time I was here, a Sangha friend, Karn, said he'd read and adopted this practice to trust emergence. I actually have a sticky note of this. Mariko saw it on the way up, stuck on my car. It says, say nothing, trust emergence. He's telling me with this teaching from Karn that he waits for the appropriate response. He just trusts that it will come if he waits. Can we do that for ourselves? Can we just zip it until it emerges? As for not creating unwholesome action with our bodies, this is also actually pretty challenging. I'm certain that even in my modest consumption, which I try to be modest, I'm creating waste, I'm killing things all the time, and I'm ignorant about all the harm that is rippling out from my really sincere practice not to cause harm. It's still all there. I actively harm my own relationship to myself all the time by judgments and criticisms and not allowing whatever's coming and going to come and go, just letting it go by. And I harm other people too. And I'm sure I'm harming the planet just by living. As for refraining from unwholesome actions with our minds, well, here we are in this sesshin with the perfect opportunity to watch this unfold, to watch our thoughts. Are we willing to say to ourselves, let that go. Don't follow that thought. Don't grab it. Don't follow it. Can we see the thoughts, even the beautiful stories and the fantasies that we want to tell ourselves are so attractive, and those beautiful, beautiful stories? Can we let them go? Because they're really unwholesome in a way. They are interfering with this here. Now, every time you grab a thought or avoid a thought, you're creating a little ripple in this moment. So this is step one of Dogen's advice. Simple way to be a Buddha, refrain from unwholesome acts. The second of the steps is do not cling to birth and death. Birth and death, I'm interpreting as a way of speaking about change, because birth and death, they're the biggest changes for us, right? That's basically how we perceive the biggest changes. And I think that maybe Dogen is saying that there's no way to protect ourselves from change, from the instability and the insecurity of the very next moment from now, and the next moment after that, and next year, and the next virus, and the next loss of a loved one. There's just no way to protect ourselves. There's old age, sickness, and death coming to a theater near you, I promise you. And yet Dogen says we can be a Buddha, that we are a Buddha, if we just let things develop. And I guess what I would like to point out is that things develop anyway. I don't know if you've noticed, but I've noticed that I don't seem to be in control of that. It seems like things just keep on happening out of my control. And I'm doing my best to support wholesome stuff, but things are still going to happen. Wholesome, unwholesome, the whole kit and caboodle is going to be happening all the time. And I think Dogen is telling us that there is actually a deep solace in this moment, just in this moment, not so much solace in clinging to the past or trying to grab the future. And by the way, when I say that we should just let things develop or unfold, I don't think Dogen is saying to be fatalistic. I don't think he's saying, you know, to sit back and give up. I think, on the contrary, he's suggesting that we loosen our grip a little bit so that we can be part of, you know, we Zennies like to call it the flow, but you could call it the harmony, since we were singing The Refuges last night in three-part harmony. You could call it the harmony, you could call it the fabric, whatever works for you. Just loosen your grip a little bit on how you think it has to be. Get out of the way. For me, also, this birth and death piece is not clinging to the question of this person, who I was, who I should be, who you want me to be, who I want me to be, who anybody thinks I should be. While we're sitting, this not clinging to a particular hat, a mask, whether it's being a woman, a Zen student, a mother, a daughter, a sister, a practitioner, any of those things. Can we let go a little bit? Can we not attach to those faces and identities? Working with whatever actually is here right now, not clinging to birth and death. Dogen's third step is to work in deep compassion for all sentient beings. Just look closely. You can't do it right now, but at the end of Sesshin, you'll get to again. Look closely into each other's eyes. The compassion and love just pouring out of each of you. I mean, I see it. I hear it in the expression of the bell and the way you're hitting the han. I hear it in your footsteps, in kinden, in coming in off the deck. Work in deep compassion for everybody. It's a way of moving closer to love, to expressing kindness, compassion, and wisdom in every whack on that horn, in every touch of the bell, in every step. Of course, working in compassion, in deep compassion for all sentient beings, means we actually don't get to pick those beings. It's not the ones we like. It's it's not the ones that get along with us or have our political views or eat the way we eat or whatever, like our music, and it goes on and on, our list of preferences. We don't get to pick. That's not really working in deep compassion with all sentient beings. We have to not pick by gender or religion or color or political persuasion or abilities or identity or our parents. That's cheating. We have to pick all humans so we all get to shine together. Can't leave anybody out. Because if we leave somebody out, we're leaving us out. We're leaving that piece of us out. You don't want to do that. I don't think we do. I don't. Everyone is about to be your friend, like it or not. Can we give ourselves the presumption, make a little penumbra around us so that everywhere we go, we are open to that possibility? I know some of you do this already, but some days I'm pretty good at this. My kids would tell you that they really don't like going anywhere with me because I make friends with everybody, but not every day. Someday I really just want people around me who think the way I do. And that's excluding that part of me. So I don't want to go there. We have to create the kindness here so we can let it spill out. Dogen's fourth step is not excluding or desiring anything with no designing thoughts or worries. I actually love that. I'm going to repeat it. Not excluding or desiring anything with no designing thoughts or worries. Now, honestly, this seems daunting. All the rest says maybe I can take some little steps. I think this is really hard. I really like chocolate ice cream and not every other kind of ice cream. I have my preferences. And I really like my preferences. They feel like comfort. But Dogen really isn't concerned about our ice cream preferences. I don't think he thinks they're dangerous. I think he thinks that if I'm not going to be happy with this incredible life that each of us has, no matter how troubled and difficult it's been and will continue to be, if I'm not going to be happy without chocolate ice cream, then we have a problem. When we sit zazen, we actually get to practice letting go of our preferences. It's what's happening in here. We sit and 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 we have to allow the fact that there's a bug flying around my face, that it's hot when you're wearing all your robes, that it's, your knees hurt or your back hurts, or, if something irritates you. Someone's breathing, someone's sleeping, whatever it is. We're working with our preferences. And then, of course, when you're done picking on all the people in the room and your knees and your back, there's also your mind. And the fish swim in and they wave hello. And you have to let them go. So those are preferences too. Can we stop excluding things and people and experiences? Can we just allow? When we give ourselves those moments of absolutely non-ruminating, no drama, free of worry, free of sorrow, free of judgment, we experience a kind of freedom that feels like love, kindness, compassion, wisdom, right here. In our own laps. I think that's a moment out of the weeds. So coming back to Dongshan and our koan, you must go where there's not an inch of grass over 10,000 miles. So 10,000 grass tips is the Chan, Chinese Zen, expression of the phenomenal world, meaning the world in which we live, me and you and everything. Sitting here during Sishin, you will find yourself in the grasses, in the weeds. This container of Sishin is designed for the enterprise of turning within and looking at the weeds. Dan Tagan Layton writes, "One may sit in monastic seclusion in remote spaces with few distractions in a pristine setting designed for settling into serene meditation and awareness. But even in such a place, through memories, attachments, patterns of attachments, awareness informed by all those we have ever met, as well as from our fellow practitioners, the wild grasses of the world may readily sprout and poke through our sitting platform to intrude on our inner calm." Dongshan's teaching is that relief from those poking grasses can only arise when we're willing to sit upright in the weeds, to be in the weeds, to be with the weeds, to allow the weeds to poke us, to teach us, to take the backward step, as Dogen says, to shine the light inward and away from any imagined safe place. Engage with the weeds right here and now. Can we make friends with our weeds? So as we sit together for the rest of this week, this precious, precious time together, may we choose love, kindness, compassion, and wisdom for ourselves, for each other, for all beings. May we experience that loving and being loved is the ultimate sense of arrival. May we embody this love. May we be the Buddhas we already are. May we see people through as the fortune cookie instructs. May we be Buddhas recognizing Buddhas and see the light in each other and all together. May we shine, shine, shine. So thank you for listening. I'd like to hear from you. I want to know how it's going so far. Any responses to any of what I threw out there? What's happening for you? How you're doing here in the weeds? And anybody online, you can just unmute. And anybody here, you can just unmute too.
I'm not necessarily sitting in the shishin, but I'm zooming into your talk, and I found it quite. I enjoyed it a lot. One of the things that came up to me was some different images, and I just kind of scrabbled them down. It is just the one of muddy water. And maybe that those are the weeds and the grasses and all that when you're talking about making friends with our weeds. But I was just feeling what a non-linear process that is in terms of how I'll accept it, how I'll fight it, how I'll it just bounces quite around. And when you said Dogen said something about not excluding or desiring anything, the ideas that I have so much of getting somewhere, I want to get somewhere. I want, you know, all those, these kind of ingrained patterns, you know, usually come up during shishin, and they do again and again and again over the years. But yeah, it was real nice to rehear my trauma. I don't know what to say. That's bad. But one of the things I think, and I'll be done with this, was it's a poem by Leonard Cohen that it got me quite a while ago when I first read it, but I reread it now and then. And it's kind of like all of a sudden I'll find myself unexpectedly, something's going on. And his little poem, and I'll read it. Is that okay?
Please. Okay.
Huh? Yeah, it's called Leonard Cohen, and the poem is called Roshi. And it says, I never really understood what he said, but every now and then I find myself barking with the dog, or bending with the irises, or helping out in other little ways. And it's kind of the osmosis of this whole thing. I don't know. I don't know if osmosis is the right word, but it just kind of comes in. And plays itself out. So, okay, that's all I have to say. I went on too long, but thanks.
You did not go on too long, Randy. You know, it's a really wonderful couple of wonderful things you bring to the room. Thank you. One is that I think everybody comes to practice because they want something, right? They want to be relieved from suffering. Nothing wrong with wanting to understand oneself so that we could be liberated from what we do to ourselves, right? I think that that's not the merchant's mind. I think that that's turning the light around to see what we can do about ourselves, kind of taking full responsibility, maybe the final growing up. So that's one thing. I think you're allowed to want to be okay with your own suffering, to stop suffering your suffering. And the other thing is the flow question. You know, I was teasing a little bit saying, you know, I jumped into the deep end of gratitude already at the Sesshin, and I'm all wet, sobbing all morning with waves of gratitude coming over me. But, you know, it's no joke to say in 20 minutes, it could be bad news. And it just comes and goes. It's just, you know, 1 minute you step outside and it's so incredibly beautiful. You cannot believe how lucky you are to be alive. And then you turn around and you're like, look at that. I got to fix that. I got to do that, you know, and life becomes a chore again. So it's all moving. And the question is, can we let it? Can we let it move us? Can we let it move us? Can we move with it? And that's the practice. You don't have to be perfect at it. Perfection is always going to be denied, as Joni Mitchell will say.
I have a small question.
Anton, you have to speak up though.
Okay. So when we choose love and compassion, is it in a way choosing comfort and excluding something that we are less likely to do?
So Randy's question is, if we choose love, meaning kindness, compassion, wisdom, are we excluding? And so I'm going to turn around, sorry, and ask you, what makes you feel like you're in the river of life? What is your choice? How do you exercise your agency in a way in this little life we have? How do you want to live your life? So I'm not telling you to look away from the weeds. I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying to exclude what's present. I'm saying allow it. And when you go to act on it with your body, speech, or mind, you might want to consider that you have agency. You may want to consider that you can repair. Maybe repair is not the right word. I sometimes think of it as repair, but you can help the river flow. You can get out of the way. You can let the fabric return to wholeness. I don't know, but it does not feel exclusionary to me. But you should explore that.
Yes, what caught my ear was the trust emergence. And I was reminded of other places I've heard that. Perhaps the first time I heard that was in this Zendo. We were doing an exercise together in which we were practicing this sort of sequence of things that involve pause, relax, open, trust emergence, listen deeply, speak your truth. And trust emergence I mostly saw that as, let's see if I can capture it. Allow myself to sort of just not fight whatever is unfolding. trust emergence, trust that what is actually emerging is okay. And within the context, though, of, you know, the larger context of that process of pausing, relaxing, listening deeply, I find that that's part of, you know, acting from a place of wholeness, you know, to having the, I think I've got some words for that, to pause, to step back and listen and have the courage and patience to wait until a creative response has arisen from a place of wholeness. And when I look at that, I see trust emergence differently. I see it as, if we're doing this, we're doing this process of being patient with ourselves, kind with ourselves, trust will emerge. Trust will grow. My trust in myself, what Ocean talked about a couple of days ago, how important that is for us to build trust in ourselves, that will emerge, that will grow. And to sort of see that phrase, trust emergence, in both ways, and it has been really helpful. Thanks for steering me in that direction. And regarding the weeds, even when I get to a place, or you know, if I'm being patient and having the courage to wait and give myself permission to be silent for a while, perhaps miss the opportunity entirely this time around and the next time around. Maybe sometime the opportunity, there will be this confluence of something really arising in me out of wholeness, and my mouth opening and me being able to help the iris bend, or help the sun move through the sky, or help someone in their next step. And I'm reminded that I mustn't expect that wholeness will be free from discomfort or confusion. That's a big one for me, is realizing that I may be acting from wholeness, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to feel perfect. There's going to be nothing poking up on my backside when I find that I'm moved to actually do something. And it seems like an important practice is to practice, like, learn about for myself what it means to rest and to play within the realm of physical and psychic and emotional discomfort. Those are opportunities. Like, I'm reminding myself to, when I'm in the weeds, can I relax? And it's related to other physical things I've done in my life, where when I start to get scared, if I can remind myself, here's the opportunity to see if I can back off on how I'm clenching, and see what's there. Yeah, that's what arose for me. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Hogan. I can't repeat everything he said. I hope you heard some of it, but I would like to respond, and I think you might get some pieces of it from my response. Speaking of trust, two things in your sensitive response. I think the trust is already there. I think it's already there. And, you know, we wait for it to emerge, like it's coming, it's coming. I think it's more like we're tuning our bodies, not just this part, the whole thing, the whole, not just us, by the way, the whole environment, the whole relationship that's present. And that's a lot, not just this body, not just this person. I think there's this kind of tuning. You're listening with your whole body. Think of Avalokiteshvara. You know, everything's listening. I think that trust is already there, and we need to pay attention so that we can experience what's already there. So that leads me to the second thing, which is you mentioned in two different contexts, stepping back to take a look, take a breath, which I understand and practice. Of late, I've been thinking about my discomfort and stepping in instead of stepping back, like just going there. And it's not necessarily speaking out of there and not doing anything actually, but really looking. So I like the fact that you have played with this in your own expression, Hogan. You played with it as if you're backing off, but you're really stepping in, backing off, stepping in, like giving and receiving at the same time. And that takes me back to the weeds, which is, I don't think the weeds can exist without all the everything. I mean, I think that they, when you speak of them as an opportunity, they are the opportunity. I mean, everything else is not an opportunity. You got that. You figured it out. You got lucky. So lots of us got really lucky. Let's call it like it is. So the weeds are the places we get to explore. That's where all the action really is for us. And you don't have to go anywhere for that. Just do what you're doing, which is paying mindful, loving attention to the best of your ability, which you do. I saw you helping people across that creek today. And in a million other ways, Hogan. Thank you. Tavi, can you speak up really loud?
Yeah, sorry.
You could take that off, yeah. I think, to be loud.
I just jumped in without seeing things that went from my heart and my mind. It was a beautiful Dharma talk. Amazing Dharma talk, actually. For me, you know. That postcard that you mentioned, that instead of seeing through people, see people through. Yeah. When we see people true, we really see ourselves true. Because we want it anyway. It's just dropping the resistance. And then the other thing, since this is Denkore, they call it transmission of light. I mean, in many traditions, light and love are conjoined or they related. I was listening to Angie's talks on Diamond Sutra. And she said, out of nowhere, she said, radiant light. She used the word radiant light. And she said, this is prajna. So record of transmission of light is record of transmission of prajna. And you define prajna. I forgot the three words that you used.
Wisdom.
Yeah, wisdom, or kindness, and love. They're all wrapped. Compassion. They're all wrapped. And Angie said, I mean, that's what we get from her anyway. So it's not like what you say. It's like being Prajna. So I just want to bring her in here. I will say one thing is kind of personal. Radiant Light is also the Dharma name of my wife. So when I heard that Radiant Light for the first time, I understood what that name was all about. The last thing I want to say is, when you were crying this morning, I knew it was you crying because I was, you know, and in the beginning I was concerned, but then I felt like it's a good kind of cry. She's crying a good kind of cry. And if I say something here, please, maybe it was just my mind. About the same time as I was sitting, I saw Kobenchino's Roshi's face come around my back. And smile. I don't know if it was the same time you're crying, but I think it was around the same time. I felt his presence. And Jiro has written a beautiful poem of Kobenchino Roshi in the Sangha House. Along, I don't know if I'm saying it right, Jiro, please correct me. Along 10,000 branches. The light of 10,000 gems, jewels. The divine light of 10,000 gems, jewels. Scatters. I probably should have corrected. And you can feel it walking. You're walking. Anyway, thank you.
Good coffee. Yeah, I will tell you that light is on our minds. Of course, it's Denkoe and the changing light. And when I was sitting over there, you all looked luminous to me. I didn't have that much coffee. It could not have been the coffee. But you all just had this beautiful little light around you. And I thought, well, that's really nice to see during Denkoe. How convenient and lovely. So yeah, for those of you who were concerned, it was all gratitude. It may not be the next time, but this morning it was just a wave of gratitude. Don't be concerned. We're all safe in here. Safe as we could be, which isn't very safe.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.